little last minute here. Thank you, especially Eric. I don't think any of us would be here if it weren't for the work that you did specifically 25 years ago.
I don't think I would be here if it wasn't for the work that I did 25 years ago. I'm included in that. Yeah, it's amazing, Lauren. I mean, I don't want to keep beating on this, but I never think about, you know, what happened 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I just don't. Unless it's, you know, like a really significant time in history, you know. I just don't think about things like that. So when it occurred to me this morning, and then when I got the call from Dave and started really thinking about it, what a ride. This has been a hell of a journey. This has just been so crazy. It's been fun. I'm very grateful for it, by the way. And I'm grateful to be here with all you guys. I appreciate it very much.
I think we all are too. Very grateful for your journey and grateful to be here with you. Who would have thought? Who 25 years ago sitting on their couch watching the very first Nitro would have thought, I'm going to be pals with that guy one day? I know I didn't. But I was also like 5 years old, so.
I was too.
All right, cool.
So we've got one here from Colonel Brian Sutton. It says, I'm at work, so I won't be able to chat much, but I will be listening. Thanks, Eric, for being a big part of my childhood. I remember watching the first Nitro at 6 years old with my dad and loved it, and also been a fan ever since. My dad passed in April, so I think about him every time I watch wrestling. You know, I love that kind of story. And I hear it so often across the board from so many people, whether I'm at a personal appearance, signing autographs, or doing something like this, I always hear a story or a reference from someone who says, you know, I grew up watching wrestling with my dad or my granddad or my big brother or my uncle or my cousins or my sisters or whatever. And it was like the one kind of one time a week when the family got together and everybody enjoyed watching wrestling. And when I hear those stories about how parents and children bonded or parents and grandchildren bonded over something that we all kind of just take for granted, I guess, to a degree, it really makes me feel good. I love hearing those stories. So thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you to Jay Roman, who gets the first question this time.
All right. Well, first off, let me start off by saying, if you don't do an Eric Fires Back every week from this point on, I'm going to be very upset. Like, it's the high. Every single time they drop one of those, it's awesome. So first and foremost, let me go ahead and say that right off the rip, Eric. You've got to keep doing them. They're awesome.
You know, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't mean to interrupt you, brother, and I appreciate the compliment. And I love the enthusiasm for that show because I actually – enjoy doing it, but I'm going to tell you something. I have to be in the right frame of mind for that, and by that I mean, look, I have fun doing it when I'm in the right frame of mind. I have fun going off on tangents or rants or whatever you want to call them, and a lot of that stuff, just, you know, we don't rehearse anything. I don't know what the subject matter is going to be. I don't listen to the comments before, you know, Conrad plays them for me. I don't look at a transcript. I don't do any of the cheating kind of shit that people that do these kinds of things normally do. It's just all off the cuff. But I've got to be in the right mood. You know, I've got to be feeling kind of aggressive, but yet still have a sense of humor. Oftentimes when I'm feeling really aggressive, I don't have that good a sense of humor, and it's not entertaining. It's just, yeah. But when I'm in that right frame of mind and we do them, I love doing them. I have a blast.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of ties into what I wanted to sort of ask in general, because I was actually listening to the end of the last one probably about 30 minutes before we started here, so I got to catch the Jim Cornette thing. Do you ever see yourself, I don't know, I guess debating maybe some of these people like Jim Cornette, who swears to God that, you know, all the proof in the world can't convince him that you were not the reason why WCW went under. Would you have any interest in doing something like that? Because, I mean, when you really sit down and look at all the facts, I think that would be awesome. One of my favorite moments ever was seeing you own him. Well, I guess it would have been Michael Hayes on that table for three and see Jim Cornette's reaction to Michael going, Eric wasn't there. And I think, you know, as we've relived some of these things from the Nitro era and seeing and I guess for lack of better words, visualizing the proof of what really happened. Would you have any interest in doing anything like that?
I mean, look, you know, we've talked, when I say we, I mean, Conrad and I think, you know, Jim and I have kind of done very casual flybys over the last couple of years about possibly doing something together, because look, we're both two polarizing types of personalities. Neither one of us are afraid to speak our mind. We're both fairly aggressive. Well, gee, those are all the ingredients for a great live event. And I would be interested in doing something, but I wouldn't take it very seriously because, well, I would take it seriously in terms of doing it, and I would have fun doing it, and I would be probably at in top form in terms of having my head on straight and being entertaining, but or trying to be. But when it comes to an actual debate, look, a guy like, you know, Jim Cornette and others, it doesn't matter what the facts are. It doesn't matter what the proof really is. It doesn't matter how badly you embarrass them. Or in Jim's case, he embarrassed himself on that table for three. He pontificated and told the story about how I snatched an opportunity from him and all. And as you pointed out, Michael Hayes went, Jim, that was before Erica was in charge. And Jim really buried himself. I mean, he's been telling this story about how I undermined him and, you know, cratered his opportunity with Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Like, who gives a fuck about Smoky Mountain Wrestling? Really?
So I'm glad you brought that up on that episode, too, because it's like, bro, what is your resume compared to Eric Bischoff's? A failed company in Tennessee. Get out of here.
Yeah, well, I don't even know where it was, but, you know, it was Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And nothing, look, nothing against small independent wrestling. I have a lot of respect for the people that do it, and I enjoy going to small independent shows. So this is not by any means an aspersion towards small independent promoters, unless those small independent promoters start thinking that they're way more significant than they are. And that's Jim. And Jim, I didn't bury Jim. Michael Hayes didn't bury Jim. Jim buried himself. He's been telling the same story for decades. And once he sat there and realized and was unable to, you know, smarm his way out of it or con his way out of it, he realized he had dug himself a hole for the last 10 or 15 or 20 years or however long it's been that he was telling that story to make himself feel better, make himself feel more important and relevant. And then Michael Hayes, just with one, you know, quick comment, just poured cold water over all of it. And you could see, that's why I didn't say much. If you go back and watch that table for three, I didn't have to say a word. I mean, Jim set himself up. Jim did the job for himself. And Michael and I just sat back and chuckled. It was fun.
Well, go ahead and let the next person get up, man. Thank you very much for all that you've done over the years. And thank you very much for Nitro. Obviously, some of us are still loving it, even all after all these years. So thank you very much, Mr. Bischoff. I appreciate you.
Thank you, buddy. And thanks for being a part of this. This is a riot. Thank you.
My honor.
Who do we got next?
I'm muted. What an idiot. Before we get too deep into this, Coach Rosie wanted to raise a toast.
Hey, Coach. Cheers, brother.
Yeah, guys, I got a little bit of the bubbly today. 25th anniversary. I didn't know it either. I popped in class and I said, oh, shit. And all the kids started cracking up once we got the notification. So all us guys in here, I can't pop it over. It's a twist top. I know it's cheap. But you know what, fellas? Let's all raise our glasses to one of the most prolific days in professional wrestling, the beginning of Monday Nitro. Here, here.
Cheers to you, Coach.
Here, here. Here, here.
Cheers. Cheers. So let's do this thing. I always, you know, I always say, you know, I don't think about the past and I don't dwell on it. And that's true. But there are certain things that I remember. You know, when I was a kid, especially like where I was when the announcement that John F. Kennedy had been assassinated, it's one perfect example. I was over at a friend's house and we were out in his backyard, kind of hanging on a fence. And we were looking at his father's car, motorcycle or something in the garage. And then, and we heard the news. And I remember right where I was standing. Do you guys remember the first Nitro? Did anybody here actually watch the very first Nitro? All right, Coach, I knew you would. Eric W. Okay, looks like a bunch of us did. What a fun night that was. What a fun, and who'd have thunk? Who would have thunk that Nitro would have such a, and I'm not putting myself over or the team that made it work, because it wasn't just me, obviously. But, and I don't mean to just put, you know, WCW over the team that put it together, but man, when we were doing it, we had no idea how much we were changing the world. And looking back at it now, it makes it even more fun.
Lex Luger.
That was it, brother. And that's one thing too. I'm glad you brought that up, John, because there were people posting things on social media today about, you know, what they remember from the first Nitro and, you know, all these things. Over the years, I've heard so many people, I'm not going to name names because some of them are friends of mine, kind of take credit for being the reason that they all kind of in their own ways take credit for being the first shot in the Monday Night War. And that's cool. You know, I don't care about any of that, you know, whatever. But in my mind, the obvious first shot was going head to head on Monday night. That was obvious. But the real first shot across the bow, the moment that kind of told everybody what Nitro was going to become, was the Lex Luger appearance.
Without Lex Luger, it's hard to tell. It was a perfect statement. Yeah. And without that first perfect statement that was Lex Luger, I know you weren't the biggest on bringing him back, listening to you because of just the end you've had. But, I mean, he was the perfect person because he was just on their TV a couple days before that.
Well, and I think – and that was cool. And that was a coup, you know, that I really enjoyed perpetrating or executing. But I think the reason to me, at least, looking back now with 2020 hindsight, the reason that move was so important was because my goal going in – was to break the paradigm, break the mold, break the pattern, change the way everybody, you know, expected wrestling to be done. That was the entire motivation behind Nitro, is to do something so different than the way it had been done that it would get people's attention. And by bringing in Lex, first of all, as a surprise, snatching him out from underneath WWE when they were sleeping at the wheel. Sorry, Bruce Pritchard, you were sleeping at the fucking wheel, brother. You weren't paying attention to business, brother. And I know you were in China or the Philippines or some shit, and that's your excuse. I love you like a brother, Bruce, but that's bullshit. You were all sleeping at the wheel, and we snatched them. We schooled you, Bruce. We spanked you like a little baby. And that kind of set the tone. That told everybody that you've got to tune into Nitro because you have no idea what's going to happen next week. Yeah. And I think that was the thing that gave Nitro its personality. It wasn't just a wrestling show. It had an attitude and an approach that was so different than everything else at that time.
Perfect shock and awe, and everyone paid attention after that.
That's right, especially Vince.
Yeah, Billionaire Ted skits came soon after that.
Yeah, well, yeah, and those were funny, you know.
Well, they were hilarious.
Those were funny, you know. And I wish I would have thought about doing the show a couple days earlier, because I would have had some of the people on our team that do research kind of go back and pull some comments and opinions from guys like Dave Meltzer and Wade Keller and others who were all, from what I remember. Now, I may be wrong about this, and I think there's a 50-50 chance I am. But the way I recall it, is there was a lot of people predicting just a dismal failure for Nitro, just burying it before they ever saw it. And I'd like to go back and get some of those comments and have fun with them, because obviously it proved to be a pretty successful show.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. How about Rocco DeRose? Where is Rocco?
Rocco, where are you, Rocco?
I'm right here. Can you guys hear me?
There you go. I see Rocco.
Mr. Bischoff, you are a savage after listening to that quote on Honky Tonk. Oh, my God.
What did I say? I don't even remember.
About Honky Tonk living 20 minutes away from you in Cave Creek. And
oh, yeah.
And you are my idol. You are my hero.
Well, you need to work. You need to work on some new heroes. But thank you very much.
I was telling Mrs. B that you and her are goals for Maria and I.
You know, well, thank you for saying that. You know, she's an amazing woman. She's been an amazing partner, an amazing friend, and we've had a fair amount of fun together too. So it's been awesome, really awesome. I'm a lucky man, and I know it.
Did you see in the weeds that the cocktail menu at Blackstone?
I did see that. That was you that sent that?
Yeah.
No, I did see that. I laughed my ass off. That's awesome.
per your recommendation.
You know, Miss B and I used to go in there when we lived in Stanford because it was literally like five blocks from our apartment. So it was an easy walk. And he had great raw oysters. We'd always sit at the bar because we're just, I don't know. I don't like sitting at a table. It feels so formal. Even when I eat dinner in a nice restaurant, I prefer to eat it at a bar. I don't know why. Maybe it's because the bartender's right there. So if you need something, you don't have to wait for the waiter or waitress to come by or whatever. And I don't like bugging people. You know, waiters and waitresses work their asses off. I used to be one. They work so freaking hard. And I hate to go, oh, you know, could you heat this up a little more? It's a little cold, or, you know, a little too much salt on this. I hate to be that guy.
Yeah.
But when I'm sitting at the bar and the bartender's right there, it doesn't bother me as much to, you know, ask for a few extra special things. But I love Black Spokes. The bartender there, I can't remember his name, big tall guy. I think he was from Romania or something. Just the funnest guy. He had such a great sense of humor, and he was a great bartender. I miss it. It's one of the things I do miss about Stanford.
That's 20 minutes away from me, so.
Stanford. Well, good for you, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Every day I wake up and I go, man, I'm really glad I'm not there.
I'm a New Yorker. I'm a born and bred New Yorker. But you definitely got me to be quite the griller.
Good.
But what was I going to say? I remember when we had our one-on-one, and I said I was 2 years old when Nitro came out. You put your head down, and it was fun. But if I have a question, now you said you remember a few things from Nitro here and there. But when did you realize, maybe after time or whatever, when did you realize that, wow, this is really a big thing? Because probably not right off the bat, but.
No. No, and again, I wish I would have had an opportunity to prep for the show a little bit more, because I really would like to have gone back and kind of look at ratings over the, you know, what was our rating in the first week? And I think we were somewhat competitive. I think we were, back then, ratings were everything, not just people watching. But I think we did like a 2.5 or 2.6, which in prime time at that time was a respectable number. It wasn't embarrassing. It was it wasn't great, but it was a very respectable number for, you know, the show the first time. But we didn't have any competition that first night. Remember, the Westminster Dog Show was on USA, and WWE had been preempted, which is why we chose that night to launch our show. I think if my recollection is remotely close to accurate, our ratings were competitive over the next 12 months, but it wasn't. We'd lose a little. We'd maybe come close to winning one. Maybe we'd squeak by 1 week and then we'd lose again the next. But for the most part, we were fairly competitive right out of the chute. And it wasn't until really 96 that things started changing. Once 96 happened, the NWO happened. It was probably a couple months after that that I said to myself, this could work. Up until that point, I was like grateful for every Monday, or actually Tuesday morning when the numbers came in. As long as I wasn't embarrassing myself, I was happy.
I loved every minute of it between you guys and Raw. And I, like I said in the past, my dad and I went back and forth. That's how I grew up. You know, looking forward to that Monday night with dad watching WCW and WWF.
It was such a great time. And that's what, you know, Chris Jericho made a statement the other day I saw on social media. I didn't read the whole statement, but it was something to the effect of he hopes WWE, you know, retreats and moves to another night. And it's like, no, man, no. You need that war. You both need that war.
That's
fun. Don't hope that WWE or NXT moves to Thursday night or Tuesday night. Yeah. That won't be interesting. The Coke and Pepsi aspect of AEW and NXT is what makes it fun to watch. You take that fun away from the viewers, and you'll be a little bit more than surprised that, you know, that's not what they're hoping for.
No, it's all fun. I mean, even watching on Wednesday nights, I look forward to, you know. But thank you for everything, and I look forward to more and more with you and everyone else. And Lauren, isn't Lauren great?
Lauren is the best. Lauren is the best. And we're going to do more stuff. I'm actually, Conrad has been after me to do a mean tweet segment where I read the most hateful, horrible, nastiest emails that I get. Yeah. I see all kinds of thumbs up. Lauren's excited. Nick Mills is excited.
There's all kinds
of people that are giving me thumbs up here. John's like it. I can see by the just evil smile on his face. He's digging it. And I've tried it actually. But I haven't been happy with the way they've turned out. They're just not entertaining, you know? So I'm going to play with it again, and I'm going to find some really good mean tweets that are worthy to comment to, because they got to be kind of fun, right? I don't mind mean tweets, but it's got to be something there to work with. You know, just, you suck.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, come on. Give me something to work with, you freaking moron. Come on, put some meat on the bone. Let me chew on that thing.
we can't spit it out.
Come on.
We can't go through Meltzer and Brian Alvarez tweets all day. Come on.
No, and they become boring after a while. It's like, God damn, I'm so tired of beating up on Dave Meltzer because it's so easy. It's like beating a beached whale. I mean, they're easy to hit. They just lay there and take it. You know, everybody knows it's true. And it's just not challenging all that often. But if I could get some tweets that are really challenging, that kind of piss me off, but are still fun, then, man, I'm all over that. And I'm going to try it again. I'll try to crank one out this weekend. You guys tell me if they suck or not.
Well, thank you again, Eric. I really appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Stay well.
You too.
Thanks, Rocco. We're going to get to as many of these as we can. Eric, as you can imagine, everybody wants to congratulate you on this silver anniversary, wants to pick your brain and tell you how wonderful you are. We got quite the list. I'm going kind of in a random order, so apologies, guys. Scott Luna, you're up next.
What's going on, Eric?
Scott, how are you, buddy?
Good, man.
Good
hair
day.
Appreciate you putting this together. Yeah, it's always a good hair day. Hey, I really wanted to kind of go through a mindset that maybe you had on that first night of Nitro with all the resources and time and efforts and talent and, you know, I'm not even going to try to relate, but in my job, you know, I've run a lot of nerves when you put so much time and emphasis and money and people involved in something and you only have success or else, you know, type of situations. And I only imagine Nitro being so big and so much money. Granted, Ted Turner wanted it, but walk me through some of the mindset that you were having that day. And then maybe before and after, you know, obviously your mindset before and then when it was over were two different things.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning because I anticipated a question like that. And I was trying to put myself, you know, what was I feeling? What was I thinking? Because I wanted to have fun doing this show. And I had to kind of dig some of that up and remember it. But, you know, it's interesting. And that's a great question. Thank you for asking it. When I look back, I had no fear of failure. It was all... Everything I looked at was one great big possibility. I didn't look at the opportunity as, oh my gosh, I could fail. And part of that is just being naive, I guess. You know, I was 40 years old. It wasn't like I was a kid, but I was new to the position I was in. I might as well have been 18 and fresh out of high school. I had never been the president of a big company, you know, publicly held company. You know, I was not a corporate guy. Everything was new to me. Everything I was doing, I was, for the most part, except for doing play-by-play on Nitro, I was learning on the job. I mean, it was an internship is what it really amounted, paid one, but it was an internship. So because everything was so new to me and every challenge was new to me, I kind of just approached everything like, well, we can't fail. You know, as long as we do the best we can and we work as hard as we can, we come up with new ideas, we throw shit up against the wall. We knew some of it would work, some of it wouldn't work. But I just had, I had zero fear of failure, partly because I was just naive and young and inexperienced, partly because that's my nature. I've never felt that there was anything I couldn't accomplish if I truly wanted to. The key there is having to truly want it. But in my life, that had always been the case. So there was no pressure. I know that sounds crazy. And keep in mind, you know, we shot the first Nitro at the Mall of America. There was no venue cost. It was a little bit more expensive to produce than a normal television show in some respects, but in many ways it wasn't. So as a physical production, it really was not that much different than shooting a show at the, you know, Gainesville Civic Center. Kind of all the same pieces, and it's the same puzzle you have to put together, you know, to produce a show. What was different is that we were shooting it in a mall. I wasn't exactly sure what that would look like. You know, you can look at it on monitors before you actually do it and all that, but until the show actually starts and you get a feel for it, all you can do is hope for the best, you know, do everything you can and to make sure it's good and hope for the best. So I had no fear. It was just all kind of giddy excitement. And when it was over, it was a very exciting night. And it wasn't for me at least, it wasn't a huge party. We didn't go out and, you know, get hammered at the bar afterwards or any of those kinds of things you would think. We didn't celebrate as a team really. But I think we all walked away feeling so satisfied that we delivered something that was very unique, which was what the goal was in the weeks leading up to it, the launch of Nitro. I was trying to get everybody to think out of the box, think about different things that we could do that were different than what we'd normally seen. And everybody had input, you know, it was a team effort. And I think when it was all over, everybody was so, you know, I call it an after sex cigarette moment. You know, it's just, wow, that was awesome. I'm just going to sit back and kind of, whoops, sorry, are the kids still in a room, Lauren? It was it was like one of those things where you just kind of sit back and enjoy the moment and kind of the afterglow of it all, as opposed to feeling like you just won the Super Bowl.
Well, you know, that was a while ago. I'm 35 years old today, but it's crazy that I still pay $10 a month to go back and watch old Nitros and pay-per-views. So I hope that's, you know, a testament and a compliment to you, because it's something that, even though as much war wrestling as I still watch today. Hang on.
That was a really cool picture though, but I like that.
You know what's funny? If that's the blue one, I took that from a plane.
Oh, that's awesome.
It just the way that it looked, it made it look like it was round. But anyways, I appreciate everything, Eric, and I appreciate you putting this together today. Lauren, thank you so much. And I'll let somebody else get to the next question. But again, my hat's off to you, and I still honor your work today. So thank you,
brother. I appreciate you being up with us today.
Stop muting myself, we'll get through this. Happy birthday, Scott. I noticed you dropped that one on us. Glad to have you with us today. You share a birthday with Monday Nitro. That's pretty cool.
It's awesome.
How about Manny Hagman? Is Manny still here?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
There's Manny. What's going on, Manny?
Not much, man. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. So I just had a quick question for you in regards to the time that you were creating Nitro and just that time at WCW. Do you feel like that was the time in your career where you were really allowed to be yourself the most? And like, do you feel like maybe issues at other companies were really because they didn't try to understand like what you do, and they just tried to force you into doing something that they wanted done, but they didn't know like how you solve problems and observe? Because I think it sounds like you had the most freedom to really be creative and be yourself at that time. And I was just kind of curious about the work environment.
Yeah, I talk about this often, and I've said this before, and I actually mean it. If I get a call from Ted Turner right now, and he said, Eric, I'd love for you to come to work with me and do whatever it is, this, but I need you to cut off a finger from your left hand, I'd do it. I do it myself. I have the tools. I do that in a heartbeat. I loved working. Don't misunderstand me. It's not like I was close to Ted. We didn't interact on a daily basis or anything like that. That would be misleading you. I had very little contact with Ted, but when I did, it was like fucking magic for me because Ted was an entrepreneur. Ted didn't care if you tried and failed, but he would get really pissed off if you didn't try. He wouldn't get pissed off. You just didn't, you just wouldn't progress very far. Ted, there was an entrepreneurial spirit. I know that sounds kind of cornball and it's probably, you know, been overused and all that, but the culture in Turner Broadcasting when I was there in the mid 90s was really, it kind of permeated from the top down. Ted was an entrepreneur. Ted was a wild man. Ted did things that nobody thought could ever be done. When Ted decided to go 24-hour worldwide cable news, people thought he was fucking nuts. When he bought the MGM Film Library, people thought he was nuts. When he was sailing yachts around the world, racing with some of the best sailors on the planet, people thought he was crazy. He would drink whiskey and be under the deck in the middle of a race. And when he was a nut, he was crazy, but he had this fire in him and this passion in him as an entrepreneur, and he believed he could do anything. And that culture, that part of Ted's personality as a leader, a true leader, really trickled down throughout the fabric of Turner Broadcasting. And people knew that you would probably, the chances of succeeding in Turner Broadcasting were much better if you were a risk taker than if you had a kind of a banker's mentality. Not that there's wrong with banker's mentality, because you need people in finance and all that to keep things stable. But Ted really rewarded, not just financially, but he rewarded risk takers and entrepreneurs. And for someone like me, taking on a job I was not qualified to take, by the way, president of a, you know, major company that was a part of a publicly held corporation, I should have never been in that position. I wasn't qualified for it. I might have been the best person for that job in that moment, but that doesn't mean I was qualified for it. And as I said earlier, there was so much I had to learn along the way. But when you're working for a company or a person, or you're in an environment that rewards entrepreneurs, it takes away the fear. It takes away, let me put it this way. You walk into a room and you say, okay, first rule, there is no such thing as a bad idea in this room. It's impossible for you to have a bad idea. It's not impossible for you to come up with an idea that we won't pursue, but there's no bad ideas. And when you walk into a room, especially as a creative person or as another business person, when you walk into a room like that, as opposed to walking into a room where you feel like every syllable you say and presenting your idea is being judged in one way, shape, or form, or you're in a bureaucracy, or you're in an environment where everybody's really just covering their ass. You know, anytime I work for anybody or I've talked to anybody about possibly going to work for them and they talk about their committee, well, we've got this creative committee over here. We've got this committee over there. We've got that committee over here. It's like, okay, I'm out. Sorry. You know, when you start creating committees, that's how horses turn into camels.
Yeah.
There's a saying in business that a camel is a horse created by committee. And that was exactly the opposite in Turner Broadcasting when I was there. So it was just such a great environment. And it was that way until the middle of 1998. And that's when I started seeing the change because of Time Warner, basically. Yeah.
That's when all those douchebags came over and like tried to put control on things, right? And we're like,
well, it's not that they were douchebags. Look, they were really smart, successful, intelligent people that had done really well. They wouldn't have been able to acquire Turner Broadcasting. But their approach was more, it was kind of like a bank taking over. Lauren, are your kids in the room still? Lauren, are your kids in the room? You can unmute yourself.
They're not. We're good.
Okay. So it's kind of like, you know, Wells Fargo taking over a chain of strip clubs. It just didn't mix.
I mean, I've worked for Bank of America. Actually, I'm a software developer there. And like all the shit that you described about people like you can't get an idea out before someone starts to criticize it. And so what happens is people just stop talking because no one's listening to them. And that environment, like you described, is more like a start of spirit in a corporation versus like we're going to mandate everything. And I guess, I don't know. It just, I'm really curious as to like why people don't like recognize like you're a problem solver when they bring you in places, and they like totally kind of like overlook like ability to see issues and then come up with solutions to them and make things better. Because I just feel like you've been underutilized since that situation ended in wrestling and not in your life. I mean, I don't know shit about that, but like, it's just rare when people are in leadership like yourself and you sit back, you look at things and you wait till you have a clear picture of the issues and then the larger problem, and then you can start boom, 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 and having fun. So,
yeah, you know, and I think part of it is, look, I try to be more aware of myself and my own flaws and, you know, what there is about my personality that has held me back, because there are some things, you know, there's a lot of flaws. There's a lot of shame in my game, you know, when it comes to certain things. I don't necessarily play well with others. I don't. It doesn't. I like to collaborate creatively. You know, I don't feel the need to be a one-man show or to have final say or anything that. I'm a pretty good creative team player. I enjoy the process. I don't feel the need to have the final say about anything. I just enjoy the process of creativity. It's fun for me. I love to, you know, sit in a room with a bunch of people and say, okay, we want to do something really unique. How can we do that? I love to work in reverse. You know, I try, and I'm not always successful at it, but even in my personal life, I was actually thinking about this yesterday and today, because I've got to kind of realign the way I'm approaching some things business-wise. And I have to remind myself, what is it I really want? Because it's easy to lose sight of what, and I know I'm going off track, guys, and I apologize. It's easy for me to get off the track of going after exactly what I want and lose sight of my really specific goals. And when I do that, I kind of, I lose my way a little bit. But at the same time, I'm pretty straightforward about things. And sometimes the way I express myself can be less than comfortable for people who are used to being in a banker's type of environment. I mean, there's a certain way you all talk to each other in a banking environment that doesn't necessarily work in an entertainment type of environment or a creative environment. And I don't adjust to that very well. It stifles me and it frustrates me, so I don't perform well in that environment. So I've kind of realized that, you know, in order for me to do anything that makes any sense at all for anybody, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be a little bit of a loose environment. Most people aren't really comfortable with that. The other thing is, oftentimes, you know, I've gone to work, you know, for example, with TNA. TNA didn't really want, I have to be careful how I say this, because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. There are people that, you know, I still like Dixie Carter and Surge and have a big difference of opinions about a lot of things, but I like them as human beings and respect them. But Dixie wasn't interested in Eric Bischoff coming in and making TNA better. You know, yeah, they'll bring someone like me in and they'll pick your brain and they'll try to take what they can take and try to make it theirs and take credit for it. But nobody really wants to get, they want the results, but they don't want to give up control. And that's difficult to achieve sometimes. But hey, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Eric. I appreciate that, man.
Thank you, man.
All right. Christopher Lausen.
Yes.
Hey, Christopher. How are you?
Great.
Great.
Great mustache, Christopher.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Eric.
Takes a set of hangers to wear a porn mustache in today's world. So good for you, man.
Well, appreciate it. It was actually kind of an accident because there was a razor shortage in my area, and I started shaving, and my partner was like, you look good with a mustache. So here I am with a mustache.
Well, different, that's for sure. You got kind of a Tom Selleck thing going. Well, kind of sort of, except for the hair, but whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, that's been that way since 18. So what are you
going
to do?
Mine's going. I'm going to break the news here. As great as my hair has been throughout my life, it's actually starting to thin out. I've been denying it. You know, like I run my fingers through my hair and go, oh, no, it feels almost the same. And then, you know, like I'll take a shower and go, look in the mirror, go, fuck me, that's a bald spot. Oh, oh, it's coming, it's coming.
Yeah, that's where I was when I was 17, so I feel you.
Well, I turned gray when I was 26, so we both feel each other's pain.
Yeah, I feel you, I feel you. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Eric. This is awesome. I just have a really, a fantasy booking question. Lex Luger obviously showing up was like one of my key moments for the first episode of Nitro. But, you know, if you can go back and assuming like another wrestler had the exact same circumstance, which I know is not realistic, but let's say hypothetically it was, would there have been a different wrestler that would have been as equally as effective as Lex Luger was in that moment? And also, you know, Lex Luger got a bit of a reaction out of that. And I remember him a year later, like winning the title and the fans were reacting to him. So clearly it did something for him. Do you think anybody else could have been as successful or as effective?
I think that's a really great question. I've never thought about that before. So thank you for stimulating the thought on that question. I think there's two answers to that. I don't recall who the biggest star in WWE was in September of 1995. Maybe somebody here does. I don't. Lex was certainly not that big star. He was an important star. He was a high-profile talent in WWE at the time. But he wasn't the star. So I think in one respect, whoever that big star was, whether it was Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, whoever it was at the time, Bret Hart, doesn't matter. Clearly that would have made kind of a bigger holy crap moment. But I think the reason Luger worked better in the long run is because he was originally a WCW guy. He started in WCW. He had a base there. Whether people loved him or hated him, it didn't matter. They knew who he was. He was part of the WCW legacy. He had a great backstory in WCW for a long time prior to that. And I think the fact that he left and came back in long run was more valuable than just the shock value of a big name with no association with WCW in the past, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so not Mabel.
No, no Mabel. Nothing against, you know, Mabel, but no. No.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, buddy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Christopher. How about Colt List?
Hi, Eric.
Colt, what's going on, brother?
Oh, not much. It's a pleasure to be on. I'm a big fan.
I appreciate that. I need big fans. I need little fans. I need big fans. I need funny fans. I need sad fans. I need all kinds of fans.
You kind of answered my question earlier. But my question was, what was it like doing Nitro at the Mall of America?
It was weird. That's a great question. Thank you for asking. It was a little surreal. And, you know, I had promoted wrestling events when I lived in Minnesota when I was working for AWA. I promoted events in weird places. I promoted one of the first events I ever promoted was in Mason City, Iowa, in 1988. And it was at a stock arena where they showed cattle and lambs and sheep and pigs and horses and shit like that. So it was a big, like, stock arena is what they call them. You won't recognize that if you live in the cities, but it's just a big, like, animal show arena. And they didn't have regular showers for people. They had like showers where you washed off your cows and your pigs and your horses and shit. And of course I produced a wrestling event there because the rent was cheap and all the talent had to take showers where the pigs take showers and the cattle take showers. And it was really cold water. And it was in February and it sucked. It was in Iowa. It was miserable. So I was used to promoting shows in kind of strange, unique places, or I had, at least in the past. But being in the Mall of America was a little bit, you know, the Mall of America was pretty new back then. It was like, I think only a year or 2 years old, if I'm correct, could be wrong, but it was still relatively new. And it was the largest mall in the world. That was their selling point. So it was really cool. But in part of it was cool for me because I was coming back to Minnesota. I had family and friends. I went to high school and college in Minnesota, So it was a little bit of a homecoming along with the launch of a brand new show in prime time. So it was kind of the best of all worlds.
Yeah, it was definitely a cool atmosphere for being in a mall. You know, you don't see that a whole lot back then.
No, and you got and the reason we did it in the mall is, you know, people forget this because, you know, they think of Nitro, and Conrad will point it out when we do podcasts. You know, there were times in 96 and 97, 98 where we would draw 15, 20,000 people, 30,000 people, whatever the numbers were. But back then in 95, WCW couldn't draw 1,500 people to an event to save their lives. And we knew that we had to shoot that show. It had to look great. It had to feel different, but we knew we couldn't shoot it in an arena because we knew we wouldn't draw a crowd. So it was a real weird decision, but it ultimately ended up being a good one.
Well, I watch it every once in a while. I'm on, you know, in the network and everything else. I have to say I love all the shows, like free shows. I listen to all of them mostly. And I'm a, like I said, real big fan of yours and everybody else's too.
Cool,
and
brother.
Thank you for doing this. And congrats on Nitro and everything.
Thank you, Cole. Thanks for being with us, brother. I appreciate it.
I too am really big fan, Eric Bischoff. Glad to have you today. Let's see. How about Kyle? Where's Kyle?
Right here.
Hi.
Kyle, what's going on today, brother?
Hey man, how you doing? I'm also, you were born in Detroit, right?
Correct.
I grew up, I was born up in the UP, but I went to high school and stuff in Trenton, so maybe about 20 minutes south of the city.
Sure.
And now I, you know, I live out on the West Coast. I live over by Seattle now.
How things in Seattle?
I live over on the other side of the Sound. I'm in the Navy out here, so it's pretty quiet.
I love Seattle. I mean, obviously, I don't think I'd want to go there on vacation right now, but Seattle's a very cool. Last time I was in Seattle, I had a blast. There's so many good restaurants. I love being somewhere where you can be on the ocean and look at the mountains at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Seattle and Vancouver are my two favorite places.
Well, right out here, like I'm looking out my window and the water's right down there. And on a clear day, I can see Rainier. But
what do you do in the Navy, brother?
I'm on a submarine. I'm a sonar tech. So kind of make, you know, try to find things, try to keep us from running into shit. So,
I have to ask you, and I don't mean to interrupt you, brother. Yeah. Tom Hanks just came out with a movie where he was a submarine commander in World War II. I can't think of the name of the movie, but you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen it?
Great.
I haven't, but I've seen U-571, and that was, if you've ever seen that, that's pretty real. I mean, it was a while ago, but it was pretty realistic. So
it's Greyhound. Thank you very much for reminding me what the name of that movie was. My wife and I just watched that. I've toured a couple of World War II submarines, and I'm sure it's different today, but probably not much.
There's the nuclear power aspect, but it's bigger. But other than that, it's kind of the same concept. They try not to change too much if it works right.
It just amazes me how people like you and others, particularly in wartime, go out in a tube for extended periods of time in amazingly cramped quarters. I mean, I've toured a couple of World War II submarines, and yeah. I'm not a big guy. I'm only 5'10". I should only weigh about 175. I'm a little heavier than that right now, but I'm not a big guy. But when you walk through a World War II submarine, you feel like a monster. They're so small.
I'm really about your height or my height. We're on the ones that I go on. That's kind of like, you're any taller, you have to start ducking.
But yeah, just moving through the passages and things. I mean, everything is weird. I mean, those submarines, at least in World War II, I don't know what they're like now, because that's the only thing I've ever toured.
Yeah.
They're made for people who are 5'7" and under, you know, 140 pounds. You know, that should be the size limit.
But I was just, as far as like Nitro, I can remember watching it the very first night and it being like, the thing that I liked about it the most was that kind of besides like the predecessor shows that were on WWF or WCW, it was, you know, you got like, it wasn't like squash matches. It was like real, it was a real event every time. And yeah, you were a great, when the NWO angle started, you were you played a great heel, so I'm sure you probably really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Being a heel is the best role you can have in wrestling. Being a babyface is tough. I would cringe at the thought of trying to be a babyface in any environment, but being a heel is great. I mean, come on. Is there a better way to make a living than pissing people off? Think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be great. You know, if I was a doctor or a scientist and I could cure some condition and improve people's lives, that would be cooler. But I don't have that skill. So the second best thing for me is to entertain the shit out of people by being an ass. That's like the greatest job in the world.
Yeah. But like I said, I was a big WCW guy kind of through the 90s. It was, you know, I started out watching WWF, but WCW seemed kind of less sort of like kind of gimmicky, and so I really enjoyed it. But I'll sign off and thanks again for doing this, and let you get on to talking to everybody else.
Kyle, thank you very much for your service, brother. Much, much respect.
All right. Zach Barnett.
Zach! Let's have a Zach attack. Come on now.
How you doing? Sorry, I got distracted. My puppy was coming in wanting to play too much here. So,
what kind of puppy do you have?
He's a 9-month-old golden doodle, and he's – I don't know if you can see him there.
Ah!
Try to make him not pull everything off the counter.
I love dogs. I just love dogs.
He's a good boy, but he's pretty rowdy every now and then. I guess my question would be about the first Nitro to the last. I know you weren't involved in the last necessarily, but what was your thoughts on having Sting and Ric Flair be the last match on Nitro, and also being one that participated on the first one? Is that something you would have done, or would you have done something different?
Well, I don't know if I would have done anything different or not, but I because you'd have to go back and look at what everything else that was going on at the time. But I think it was a good idea. I think it told a good story. I think it signified the end of something, as sad as I was to see it happen. If you're going to do it, that was a great way to do it. I had no issue with it at all.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think for historical purposes, that, you know, you probably couldn't have done anything better. I mean, unfortunately, I think some of the guys that participated in the first one at that point were maybe no longer with us. I think Ray Traylor probably wasn't at that point, so couldn't have done that. So, yeah, I agree. I just didn't know if you had any other thoughts on that, or if there's anything else maybe you just would have done different overall in period there.
No, that was I think, you know, in retrospect, I think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, I know Flair has said that he maybe didn't have the confidence that he once did, and maybe didn't necessarily want to participate. But I know he went ahead and did it. I didn't know if you'd ever spoken with him about that since. Or...
No, I didn't. You know, we never have. And look, Rick is a real emotional guy. So I think the idea that WCW was going away, even though we had a lot of issues, you know, Rick and I had a lot of business issues and personal issues, but WCW was still more of Rick's home than WWE was. And I think, knowing Rick the way that I do, I'm sure that made him very uncomfortable. I'm sure it affected him differently than it affected, you know, people like me. But Rick's such an emotional guy that I'm sure it had an impact on him. And sure it was a challenge for him, but he overcame it.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. I'll let somebody else have a crack here. Thanks.
All right, brother. Zach, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I got time for one more, and I got to jump on a conference call.
We got one more. He's a busy man. Zach, I think I saw what I think I saw. It's College Colors Day, so had to point that out. All right, we got Anthony Pyers. Is it Pyers? Where's Anthony? Anthony.
Anthony, where are you? Come out and play.
All right, we may have missed Anthony. That's okay. How about, let's put it off to Nisha Dali in the chat, had a question. I'll let him ask his question.
Nisha, where are you? I see your chat.
Hey, congratulations, Mr. Bischoff, 25th anniversary of Money Nitro, and hello, everybody.
Thank you, brother. I love that action figure you've got there.
Oh, thanks, yeah.
You notice the size of my hands? You know what that means.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Lauren will tell you. Not that she knows, but it's the whole big hand thing.
Oh, my God. Well, the question I had, Mr. Bischoff, was who came up with the name Nitro for the show?
That's a great question. That, the answer to that is Brad Siegel. Brad Siegel was the president of TNT Network. And prior to launching Nitro, the wrestling show, TNT had a block, what they call a block in television. It's like usually 2 to 3 hours, sometimes 2 hours, where they would have different kinds of action movies or romantic comedies or sitcoms or whatever. Those are blocks of similar types of programming. So if you have somebody that just really loves action reruns and things like that, you know, Stallone movies and Arnold Schwarzenegger movies and all kind of Jean-Claude Van Damme shit, you know, they would have a block of those kinds of action movies that were really targeted towards a male 18 to 49 year old audience. And that Nitro block was pretty successful for TNT. So in Brad's opinion, and I agreed with it 100%, it was a great idea. His opinion was, since they already had that block, as they call it, it's kind of like a subdivision that appeals to certain people. As long as they had that block, why not extend it to the existing audience they already had by calling it Nitro and making it seem like it was an extension of something that was already working? So that was a really smart idea on his part, and it was all his idea.
Well, appreciate it. Thank you so much for that insight, and congratulations once again.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Listen, I hate to cut this short. Every time I do one of these and I say, okay, I've got an hour, and it feels like that should be enough time, I'm thinking to myself, I needed 2 to 3 hours to do this. I promise you I will do another one very, very soon, because I know there's a lot of people that jump on here and they can't get their questions to me because I only have an hour and a half, whatever it is. So one of these days we'll do a marathon. I want to really, you know, especially today, 25 years, it's been such a great freaking journey. And it wouldn't have been a journey if it wouldn't have been for all of you, whether you were 2 years old at the time, or 10 years old, or 15 years old, or whether you never saw it at all, because we're now talking about it. So thank you all very, very much. I appreciate each and every one of you. Lauren, thank you again for hosting for us. And I promise I'll come back real soon, all right?